Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello! And welcome to a new episode of Talking Snooker with Phil Haig and Nick Metcalf. Once again, talking about the game we all love.
We are indeed, and been a little bit of a quiet week in the snooker world, or has it? It seems non-stop. Just maybe not the biggest tournaments on TV, but plenty to talk about as always.
Quite a maverick there. We'll get, not a busy week, or has it been? I like that. Teasing the punters there. Yeah, a bit quieter, I think it's fair to say, but still enough for on and off the table to keep us going for the next hour or so, I would say. In an episode that I think we're going to very creatively call Latest News and Latest Views. Took us ages to come up with that name. Hopefully it does what it says on the tin, Phil, in that we will round up the stuff that has happened on the table, some of the business coming up, and catch up with your correspondence. Quite a lot of Goths correspondence, we can tell you from the start, after the very successful seniors event there. We've been inundated with Goths. There's plenty that's come in since that we're not using, so we'll hold that over for next time. But yes, thank you for that. So, yeah, how's your week been? We're speaking off air, Phil. You know, quite a lot of sporting action, a lot of football today. Sunday we're speaking in the UK, away from snooker. But, you know, we're not just all about snooker, are we? Not 99% of us is, but...
We are on here, but now I've been watching a lot of darts this weekend. The UK Open, one of my favourite tournaments of the year, at Butlin's Minehead. I went there the year COVID, because it was just before COVID started, as a punter. And what a weekend that is at Butlin's Minehead watching the darts. I would recommend that to anyone. I was describing it to my girlfriend the other day. It's like sort of a kid's playground, but for adults. Just wandering around. You go and watch some darts. Then there's a big room where you can play pool, play snooker for a bit, bowling alley. And you're there for like 4 days. There's swimming pools, slides. It's all very silly, but it's a lot of fun. So I enjoy the UK Open, whether you're there or not. So that's been my weekend mainly.
I went to Butlin's Minehead a long, long time ago. And it is right on the sea, isn't it? Quite a nice little town as well. So it's, probably a bit mean to say it really, but some of the accommodation, certainly I've known at Butlin's going back, has got more than the whiff of the 1970s about it. It really has. I love the 1970s. So, you know, I can't, but it really has.
Yeah, it's retro stuff. But, yeah, it's one where I went to, yeah, with my mates. It's not where we'd take our partners for a romantic getaway or anything like that. But for a few days and a few beers, absolutely fun.
Can you imagine that as a potential ender of dream relationships? I'm taking you to, but you're doing what? Lots going on. Yeah, I've seen ITV, loads of sport on ITV these days. That's been on there, isn't it? Or the UK Open. Really good athletics I'm enjoying from Glasgow over the last few days. World indoors, so lots going on away from the snooker. But of course, on this podcast, our focus is the beautiful table game. And Phil, let's first of all talk about the action that's happened on the table, shall we? And since we were last on air, the Championship League has continued in Leicester. And the first thing to say is that we have seen the 200th maximum break in professional snooker made by Joe O'Connor. Bit of a Leicester double, Phil. Mark Selby, the man that made the 100th maximum, and now Joe O'Connor with the 200th. And here's some quotes from Joe after that obviously special moment for him and indeed in the game. To get my first maximum break today, I think that's the first time I've been past 70 or 80 this season. I'm so pleased. I was really nervous, especially after getting perfect on the blue. Not a very politically correct moment here from Joe coming up. I wanted to play it confidently, and I ended up hitting it like a fairy and not landing on the pink. Somehow I managed to get on the black and knock it in. Yeah, the pink was sort of one that was anything but routine or the way you'd want to have it to middle. And then the black as well was, I mean, as we've seen far worse blacks for 147. That Hendry won a million years ago, and the white was virtually near the pocket, comes to mind. But it still wasn't a black year one if you had to choose a black to you want for 147. But he got it. And, well, we seem to have had, well, we have had loads this season, Phil. They just seem to be coming thick and fast. But I guess, that's an obvious thing, but when 147s are being made, it does spread around the game, doesn't it, sometimes? We've seen it at tournaments where you can feel one's coming. At the moment, you feel one's going to come. They might slow up now we've got the 200. One of those funny things, it's been so, you know, it felt like it was 192 like a few weeks ago, and now it's on 200. You know, they've come thick and fast. But, yeah, we see more these days, but there's obviously something still special about them. And number 200 is a real landmark.
Yeah, and amazing for first, any player's first would be unforgettable. I think those sort of Champions League, the Invitational Championship League especially, seems to be prime grounds for heavy scoring. I know last season, that's where Matt Selt was just seemingly knocking in century after century for weeks on end, it seemed like. I know John Higgins made a 147 in this event a few weeks ago as well. But yeah, maybe it felt like big scores were coming. That game he made it in, Joe O'Connor against Elliot Slesser, was one of the better best of fives you'll ever see. I've got this frame scores here. Slesser won the first with a 66. Then O'Connor made 132, 147. Slesser made a 73 in the next, and that was after O'Connor made a 72. And then O'Connor won the decider with an 85. So that's not bad, is it? I think that would be in the category of when we were talking about see what the standard is like a bit down the rankings these days. You know, these guys have gone deep in tournaments, but they're not regular in doing so. But God, they're very good players. So yeah, fantastic stuff from Joe. Yeah, it doesn't even seem that long ago. I know it's a few years now when Dave Gilbert made the 147th. I remember that being a thing. So yeah, that we really do rattle through them now. But yeah, no, fantastic. And yeah, that comment he made about the first time he got past 70, I think he has sort of. I was sort of expecting Joe kind of to kick on a little bit this season. He hasn't really, but I do really rate him. He's a nice lad as well. So pleased for him to do that.
Yeah, that's a nice way of summing it up. And in terms of dotting the I's and crossing the T's a bit more on the progression of the Championship League, which is heading towards its climax now. Well, Group 6 last Monday and Tuesday, we were actually on air last Monday, mentioned that Kyron Wilson was stringing some wins together. Well, he ended up being the winner. The semi-finals last Tuesday saw Pang Jung-soo beat Elliot Slesser 3-2. And Kyron Wilson beat Sam Craigie 3-2. And then in the final, it was Kyron Wilson 3, Pang Jung-soo 0. And then Wednesday and Thursday, Ronnie O'Sullivan played, Phil, but then pulled out after four of his six matches. He beat Sam Craigie and Elliot Slesser before losing to Jack Jones and Joe O'Connor, and then he withdrew. The semi-finals saw these results: Jack Jones 3, Jordan Brown 0, and then Joe O'Connor 3, Elliot Slesser 1. The final, Joe O'Connor 3, Jack Jones 0. And we are left with the winners' group coming up very soon, Phil, March 12th and 13th. And, well, these are a bunch of... I don't recognise half these names, Phil. Stuart Bingham, Chris Wakelin, Mark Selby, Neil Robertson, John Higgins, Kyron Wilson, Joe O'Connor. I mean, it's not the biggest event, but roll up for those names. Some that should be some cracking action to come.
Yeah, whoever wins through that winners group will be a well-deserving champion, because that's not going to be easy. Yeah, there was that week, the previous set of groups, when I went down to Leicester and spoke to a few of those guys, actually, and the three consecutive winners were Selby, Robertson and Higgins. So that really bumped up the star power there. And then, yeah, Bingham, Wakelin, Kyron and now Joe O'Connor as well. So, yeah, as I say, whoever comes out as the champion will be very well deserving and will get a place in the champions. They usually do anyway. It's quite far down the old sort of ranking list of tournaments to get in there. But we've had so many repeat winners, it's going to be guaranteed to be in there next time. So, yeah, that'll be interesting. And that's been bumped back because I think it was meant to be sort of this coming week, but Saudi joined the calendar. So it's down for the 12th and 13th of March. So, yeah, that'll be interesting to watch.
And we'll round up what's happened in the climax of this non-ranking version of the Championship League, where we're next on air with you here on Talking Snooker. Well, Phil, we've had some, being UK-centric, I'm sure there was ways to watch it elsewhere, but we certainly had some action live on the television in the UK in the last couple of days, this weekend, on Channel 5, which is a free-to-air channel here in the UK. I know many of you are UK, but not everyone is. And that was the Seniors 900. We already mentioned Goff's at the top of the show. And went down extremely well, didn't it? Let's be clear. Loads of fans saying they really, really enjoyed it. We've got some correspondence, as I say, to come later. And a very familiar winner, Ken Doherty, the 1997 world champion, won the event. Very emotional he was as well. Really meant a lot to him. You can see that at that venue. And obviously, being a proud Irishman, that really meant a lot. And, well, it was a throwback in so many ways. And lots of friends of mine, people I know in the game that were there texting me saying, you know, some of them have been before back in the day, so it was very nostalgic for them. Some of them had never seen Goff, so they're like, wow, this place, you know, all the hype, you know, it does live up to that, really. And, well, some of the names, Phil, I mean, our old favourite, I say our, me and you, but I think everyone's, Tony Knowles, the old, spotting the old ageing rocker look, as he does so well. Dennis Taylor was in it as well. I mean, I thought he'd retired, Phil. He's had more comebacks than Frank Sinatra, Dennis. And we were left with semi-finals of Ken Doherty, Fergal O'Brien, an all-Irish semi, with Ken making a break of 101 to win it. And then Stephen Hendry, Jimmy White, wouldn't you know it? Jimmy winning it on the black. And then the final, which I was going to the office on Saturday. I didn't see much of the earlier part, but latter stages I did. And I watched the final. It was really good quality, actually. Jimmy with a break of 77 in the opening frame. Then Ken with a 61 to make it one each. And then Ken winning the deciding frame to claim the title. It really looked good. It was long coverage on a Saturday afternoon. And let's be clear, you know, if you'd have said maybe 5, 6 years, maybe even fewer years than that, you'd have a whole afternoon on a pretty big channel in the UK set aside for live senior snooker. You'd have been like, you know, well, this doesn't sound very likely, mate. But that's what we're seeing. And it's quite something, isn't it? Let's be clear.
Yeah, I think they've really hit the jackpot in some ways here, because the 900 obviously came about in the amateur game, and it's been really successful for that. And then the seniors version seems perfect for these TV slots. You know how long it's going to be, and all these recognisable names. And I can only imagine that other players sort of getting towards the latter stage of their career who can qualify to play in these will be well up for it, because it looks like a lot of fun. And Ken will have loved that. I mean, I was treated to speak to Ken ahead of the tournament, which is always a pleasure. And he was telling us, I think he told the story even on here about when he was an usher there and he had to get Alex Higgins drinks. And it's the old story about if I asked for an orange juice, I mean a vodka and orange juice. But he was talking as well about, you know, he's considering retirement soon. It's not out of the question. He doesn't love suffering all the defeats, but he still does love playing. But when I asked him what goals he's got left in the game, he said, he'd love to play at the Crucible again. But first things first, I want to win at Goff's this weekend. And that's what he did. And he said that with a caveat, because I asked him about the time he was in the final at Goff's in the Irish Masters and ended up as the champion, but only because Ronnie O'Sullivan failed a drugs test. So when he said he wants to win at Goff's this weekend, he said, and win properly without anyone failing a drugs test. And I said, you know, knowing some of the guys in the seniors tour, you can't guarantee that, but hopefully.
Oh, wow. That is a naughty line. Wow. Yeah, I like that.
Not anymore these days. But no, I can see why he's emotional. Yeah, it meant a lot for him. Yeah, that venue he worked at, I think he started working there when he was 14, played there, but never officially lifted a title there. So to do that now is superb stuff. Obviously, a great, great snooker man. So I was dead pleased for him. And yeah, very pleased for everyone putting that event on because, as you say, both so far look like they've been a real success.
Very much so. And, you know, the TV coverage really looked the part, didn't it? Rachel Casey, the ideal person you want to be fronting any sort of coverage, really. And just generally really good. I must admit, there was one or two people that have messaged me to say that the adverts did cut in towards the end of one frame, which is a bit unfortunate. It does happen. But on the whole, people saying that, goodness me, it was a pretty cold old Saturday afternoon here in much of the UK. Of course, the early part of the spring here, but still pretty cold here, wet in parts, people settling in, cup of tea, cup of coffee, maybe something stronger, and enjoying a lot of hours of really good snooker there, Phil. And, you know, good standard, actually. You know, a lot, I say it's surprising. I don't mean that's how you mean, you know, because sometimes the seniors events, they can be quite protracted frames and, you know, you don't see particularly big breaks. But I don't know if it's the nature of the sort of timed format, but they were really getting on with it. And there was, to the extent that actually, I was saying to your fair, people messaging me that I know I was getting to work for about 3 p.m. to watch it from there. They were saying, actually, we're really getting through this quickly, so you're not going to see that much. And I was surprised by how quickly they were getting through it. But yeah, lots of good breaks. So I don't know if I mentioned, did I, that Ken made a 101. I think I may have done. That was a century from Ken. Yeah. So generally really good. As I say, I'm sure these events will go from strength to strength. And yeah, nice nostalgia, trip down memory lane for people. And yeah, as I say, just, you know, congratulations to everyone that put it on. And golf's obviously looks the part. I mean, the debate will go on, you know, and let's let it do so, whether it's ever going to be able to stage a big high profile ranking event again, or one of those one table events. People, I think, saying that, you know, accepting it couldn't do more than that. But I just think I'll maybe steer clear of specific golf's talk on that, and just say an event in Ireland is definitely overdue. And I sort of mean the island of Ireland on top of the event we have in Belfast, which is brilliant. I mean, look at the event in Belfast. You want any idea of what, you know, what the people in the island of Ireland think about the game? You know, it's more anecdotal and just personal for us. We have so many fans from Ireland on this podcast. For whenever we see listenership, the numbers are terrific. The correspondence we get from Ireland, the love in Ireland for this game is profound, actually. And wouldn't it be lovely to see not just a big day like this, which was great, and lots of Irish fans loved it, but if they could just get an event over there. Has to be right, has to be, you know, the money has to be in place and everything right. You know, you can't just do it on a bit of nostalgia and a wing and a prayer. It has to be done properly. But wouldn't it be nice to think that could be done, because the love and respect and enjoyment for the game is there for all to see.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'm sure it would be very, very popular. Yeah, I mean, it's the all the usual questions. But I know when Fergal O'Brien said he announced his sort of pending retirement, he set that as one of his goals to achieve from now on, to try and encourage one over there. Yeah, I spoke to Ken about if they could get a tournament in Goff specifically, because we were talking about that. And yeah, if it was to be there, it would have to be one of the smaller ones, as in smaller in terms of small field. It doesn't have to be a small event, something like the Tour Championship or something. But you know, there's so many variables to these things. But yeah, certainly in terms of, would it be nice for everyone to see it? Would it be really well attended? Almost certainly. So yeah, that would be superb. Because as you say, yeah, we've got a lot of Irish listeners, Irish correspondents. Mm. So but a pleasure to have you on board. And anytime I've been to Ireland, it's been an absolute delight to love it over there. So yeah, any excuse to go visit.
Yeah, amen to that. And there's a few nice stories around in the press, actually. If you haven't read, this is just before the event, but yeah, it's still very relevant. The Irish Times, return to Goff's glory days could be break Irish snooker needs. Really good piece, actually. from Simon Bracken, lots of commentary and comments from some of the sort of greats of Irish snooker in there, lots of good opinion. And, well, the way it ends, Phil, maybe the way we should go into the next piece of the podcast, next section. Simon says here, as the best players in the world head for the snooker hotbed of Saudi Arabia, it feels as if the organisers are missing a trip closer to home. Now, a bit of a swipe there from the journalist. But, of course, we are heading to the Saudi Invitational event, aren't we, in the coming days. We told you last time that the event will be available to watch on Eurosport. That's where you can see it, certainly in the UK and across Europe. And DAZN is where you can see it in many other parts of the world as well. And we can also tell you the event is a sellout. All the tickets have been sold. Now, I've had a look at the ticket site. They're very well priced. They're terrific value, actually. They're really, really, really good. They're cheap. The very cheapest ones are cheapest chips, actually. But it has ensured that the event is sold out. All the tickets have gone for it. So we won't have to speculate about there being no one there, as we've seen for some events over the years. I'm in China, let's not beat around the bush, but that won't be the case for this. The debate does go on, of course, over the event. It is controversial. We should point you the way of a friend of the podcast, David Caulfield, who has written a piece on his very good Snooker HQ website, which is titled "Selling Its Soul or Growing the Sport: Snooker in Saudi." Very, I think, intelligent analysis from David as well, looking at it from both sides, and of course, big friend of ours, as we say, because he was the first voice that wasn't me or Phil ever to be on this podcast. Phil, as ever, you've done a brilliant job of outlining, because I was getting very confused with who was playing what and when, but I've had a look at your story and literally done the old Control-C, Control-P, two of the most well-used buttons on the, or three of the most well-used buttons on the keyboard. And I think that's done the job for me. So coming up on Monday, we've got Ding Junhui against one of the wildcards players who's I'm pretty sure it's been announced since we were last on air. And it's Saudi Arabia's Omar Ajedlani, who's 44, and will have a really big day in the spotlight here. And notice he beat Barry Pinches at Q School a few years ago. So obviously can play a bit, and what a moment for him. And John Higgins will take on the other wild card, who is Alo Badley, who won the IBSF Men's World Championship last year. So obviously, again, some real talent there. Then on Monday evening, it's Ali Carter against Ding or Ajedlani. And then it's Mark Williams v. Higgins or Alo Badley. And it's a lot of either ors here. It's a bit like the FA Cup draw we just had, Phil, isn't it? When they decided to ludicrously do it before half the games had been played for the sixth round of the cup, and it ended up being very messy. This feels similar. Tuesday, then quarterfinals, 2 p.m. Mark Allen v. Mark Selby, Luca Bissell v. Carter or Ding or wildcard. Then 7 p.m. Judd Trump, Sean Murphy. And then Ronnie O'Sullivan v. Williams or Higgins or wildcard. Wednesday, semis in the final. Sorry, loads of names from me there. Let's go to you, Phil. That's plenty enough of my voice. Lots of big stars to play in the coming days. And there's no doubt that there'll be a lot of eyes on this tournament. And as I say, depending on where you are, for a lot of us here in the UK, it'll be on Eurosport.
Yeah, the recently expanded field, isn't it? I didn't know that was coming on the Saturday, with Ding and Higgins being added in. So then we've got the quite unusual, if you look at the sort of the bracket, if you go on the Wikipedia or wherever, you might see the draw bracket. Sort of two rounds before some players enter at the quarterfinals. So quite the odd setup for a tournament, really. But yeah, I mean, you would expect Ding and Higgins to win against those wild cards, although they're not complete no-hopers by any means. Ali Alabadli, who's won the IBSF, you know, that's a very historic tournament. And he beat Chun Kar Wei, who just won the WSF Championship to come on tour, beat him in the final. So he can certainly play. He's not as good as John Higgins, I think we can say that confidently. But, you know, these aren't guys they've just sort of found knocking around in the local snooker club. So hopefully they'll put on a good show. But, yeah, you'd expect the experienced tour pros to come through. And then you got Williams against Higgins the next round, and Carter against Ding. for a chance to play the guys coming in at the quarterfinals. But yeah, we were talking off air, obviously, the 167, we found out about what's going on there with the golden ball. It's going to be on the bulk cushion, in the middle of the bulk cushion, so in line with the brown spot. And as soon as, it's only potable, we knew this, it's only potable after 147. So as soon as a 147 is not on, then the referee takes it off the table and we play on as normal. And a foul on it or anything, any foul involving that is worth 4 points, not 20, or the value of the ball on it's higher. So, yeah, they've cleared up some of those questions we had, slightly bizarrely, with a video narrated by Jack Dasowski. I don't know why he was involved. I think I heard he's doing some commentary for the World feed on it, so, or punditry. So that'll be why, but it did seem a bit odd. But yeah, so that's what's happening with that. And we have also found out it's going to be $500,000 for anyone who does, well, not anyone actually, the first person who makes a 167 break, which is just shy of 400 grand in pound sterling. So, you know, very worth doing if you're there. Certainly worth going for in what is effectively, you know, like an exhibition tournament. You've got to be taking them on. But the interesting thing we were saying off air, that it's just for the first person who makes that gets their $500,000. And the likes of Higgins and Dinger, who are coming in and got two rounds before the likes of O'Sullivan and Trump come in at the quarterfinals, they've got extra goes at this. So it could be that someone's pocketed $500,000 before anyone's had, you know, had a go at a frame at all. So interesting developments. There's been some more clarity to it because it was, I was saying to you, we were saying to each other in the week or so beforehand, some things were unclear to the point where it was a bit secretive in terms of prize money breakdowns and what was going on with the gold ball, what was going on in general. But things have become clear a few days before it kicks off. And I think we know what's going on now.
Well, I think it'll be hailed in some quarters as marketing genius, won't it? But I certainly don't see it like that. It's all been a bit cloak and dagger for me. And yes, well, I must admit, I've held off talking about this piece of new gimmickry until now, but it is interesting, isn't it? Because I mean, we were initially told that the ball wouldn't be on the table. I mean, it seems a lot less dignified to me that the ball's going to be on the table throughout. I mean, initially the idea was, oh, it'll be brought out, and that seemed like, you know, a sort of gimmick that you really wouldn't lose sleep over. But for the ball to be on the table, I mean, that makes it a completely different sport. Now, you could say, so what? It's an exhibition. And listen, I think, so what? It's an exhibition event. You know, it's not, they wouldn't do this in a ranking event. So that's okay. But it's going to interfere in other balls may hit it and, you know, what have you. So it'll, you know, there's no doubt that, you know, it'll create interest, certainly early on. There'll be a sort of, I can't think of that. When you want to see something that's a bit strange and you sort of, I can't think of the word now, but there'll be that kind of, not car crash theory, that's the wrong way, that's not right, but it's something like that. There'll be a curiosity value, of course. And, you know, I guess the other thing to say, in fairness, it will be irrelevant for an awful lot of the time, won't it? If someone lands on a blue straight away, it goes. So there'll be loads of frames where it just won't be relevant. So that's obvious and that's fair. I mean, another thing we were saying, I mean, you were pointing out the pockets could be, I mean, beware the pockets on this, eh? I mean, beware the pockets are a lot of more normal tournaments, let's be clear. But on this, you know, it's, I can't see them playing like the Masters, which are the best pockets I've ever seen. They're not going to be like that, Phil. If you're expecting pockets like we saw at the well, of course, we saw maximums. That's the thing, though. Didn't stop maximums being scored. But you're not going to see pockets like we saw at the Masters.
No, I'm thinking more that the event in Hong Kong where we saw the record crowd, which, you know, I was sort of similar, I mean, very different vibes in many ways. But, you know, that was sort of a one-off exhibition. Huge crowd, made for good headlines for the sport in that way. And the pockets there were super generous. And there were lots of centuries. Marco Fu made a 147, didn't he, in a decider against John Higgins. And that just felt like a 147 was coming at some point because you know, the best players in the world he got there, and the table was playing very generously. So I would be surprised if it's not similar situations, similar conditions that are very amenable to scoring. But yeah, look, I mean, I don't want to criticise anything too much until I've seen it. And you know, I wrote that piece in like January when it was all announced. And I think sort of, I think the idea behind it is a bit naff and tacky in terms of it's just the organisers wanting to say, this could be the biggest break ever. Look at our gold ball, which I think is a bit, yeah, naff. But I don't want to judge the spectacle of how it comes across until I've seen frames played with it. Because, you know, if someone's clearing up on 147, you know you've got a shot at something for $500,000, it's going to be exciting. There's no two ways about that. And as you say, as long as it's in this kind of tournament, which is effectively an exhibition, an extremely well-paid exhibition, then, you know, we'll wait and see, won't we? I don't want it, but I'm as much as it is against my initial sort of instincts, I still don't want to judge it too harshly until I've seen it.
But I think more importantly than that, I think it's a way of deflecting away from talking about more important things, isn't it? I mean, this is the first time I've talked about it. I don't particularly like doing so now, but I think it's a simple way of deflecting away from talking about things we should be talking about. And that's really been my fundamental problem with it. But yet, listen, there's no doubt in the coming days that, yeah, I've been speaking to a couple of people recently in this is a bit of a wider point, actually, in the newspaper business. They've started to notice that snooker's able to attract rather more headlines than they previously thought, which we've always known, of course, Phil. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, we're going to see that come to fruition, I think, in the coming days. And, you know, there will be a lot of attention on this tournament, I'm sure. Not all of it will be good, and not all of it should be good. Because there's many issues raised by this complex matter. But listen, keep your thoughts coming anyway, you know, from what you're seeing, talkingsnooker@yahoo.com or tweet us at talkingsnooker. We've got a couple of bits of your correspondence, which we trailed for a while, both sort of pro what we're seeing with the foray into Saudi Arabia. But have you got anything more to say about that, Phil? The players are, of course, out in Saudi Arabia now. We know it's underway on Monday. And we see Mark Allen, haven't we, come out and say that, you know, he doesn't want to get involved in the politics of this at all. And for him, it's just snooker. And that's what he wants to focus on. And that seems to be the view among you know, the players generally. We haven't heard from some of the players, but the players generally. I think it's going to be a lot more interesting in a way in the August-September event, because there's so many more players going there that they're then. We'll probably get to the heart of the matter a little bit more, that one. But anyway, Saudi coming up, and yeah, maybe you can have your final word on that for now. We're certainly going to see plenty of big stars. And listen, we might not see the biggest break of all, but I think we'll see some good breaks, won't we? I can imagine we're going to see some real standard. And the thing I've always said from the start, when I've asked people to come up with the, you know, reasons why they're okay with this, and they've always said, well, people in the area should, you know, why should they be denied? And I've always liked that view. Locals, expats, we always call them expats when they're Brits, don't we? We have a nice kind way of saying it. They'll have a chance to see it, and you know, they'll revel in it. You know, they'll revel in live snooker, and the snooker will be good. It's a bit like with the Qatar World Cup, you know. It was great in the sense that football was great and snooker's great. So what will be on the table will be good. Yeah. Mm. That's been not particularly relevant in my view, but I think what we'll see on the table, Phil, will be good.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's never a problem. I mean, when you turn on the TV and watch a snooker match, it could be anywhere. You won't know when you're watching it. And, you know, most people won't care. Well, I am intrigued to see how it all looks. I've seen a little video of the arena being set up, and obviously ticket sales, as you say, very good. So I'm interested to see how the setup is and everything. But I mean, again, it's like that. Like I said about the Hong Kong one, in terms of a tournament, it doesn't sort of excite me in a great deal, because it was. I know Ronnie O'Sullivan won that one in Hong Kong, but if whoever won, so what? You know, it was great for them. It's great for all the people who were going and playing in it. I don't feel like it's got great significance this week beyond that, you know, other than if you could say that's because why the ranking event has come about, which is significant, but I'm not sure if that's the case or not. But yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it goes, see how it's presented, and we'll talk about it afterwards.
Very much so when we're next on air on here on Talking Snooker. Phil, the Women's World Championship taking place next week at the Dongzhuang Snooker Academy in Dongzhuang, China. First time the tournament's been played in China. And I've seen some of the pictures of that arena. It looks terrific. Sort of two main tables, and then, as I understand it, other tables will be sort of around them. And it just looks, yeah, it looks the part. Really good action to come. Plenty of sort of, well, star names now, and that's the beauty of the development of the women's game, that these are star names now. People like the defending champion, Bipat Sirapaporn, world number one Mink Nutra, and of course 12-time champion, friend of the podcast, Rhianne Evans. So there'll be seniors events and under 21 events. They'll take place, I think, more towards the start of the week, and then of course the main world championship. So we wish everybody good luck. I know many of our friends and colleagues will be off to organise that event, to help cover that event. And yeah, it should be a cracking week of action. And the tournament gets bigger and bigger every time. And as I say, looking at that venue, it really looks like you know, a smashing place for the tournament to take place in.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, and all the big names there. So it'll be interesting. I'm not sure how much, if any, we'll be able to watch. Sometimes it's a bit dodgy, isn't it? We don't get to see very much. But hopefully sometimes there's some of it streamed. So keep an eye out on social media for any updates on that. I've not seen the prize money there. I mean, that's the kind of thing that we'd want if, you know, when we're going to plunder the riches in other places to help grow the sport. You know, if areas like the prize money at the Women's World Championship is what we'd like to see the money in snooker funneled towards, I would say. Because it's really sort of pitifully small and has been historically. The ladies that go and play in that, you'd have to pretty much win it to make your money back. So it'd be good if things like Saudi this week help things like that in the coming days. But yeah, no, interesting to see who comes through that, because there's a 2-year tour card as well on the line, as BIPAC won last time, somewhat surprisingly. So we'll see who can come through and win it this time.
And if you've got the specific views on the women's game or this tournament to come, do contact us, talkingsnooker@yahoo.com, or tweet us at talkingsnooker. If you've got a particular favourite women's player, or you want to talk about the development of the women's game in general, or anything you're following, as I say, at this World Championship, do let us know. One more line, Phil, for now, then we'll move on to correspondence, and that is that Stephen Haworth has won the English Amateur Championship, beating Callum Downing 6-4. At the Landywood Snooker Club. So a notable victory for a friend of the podcast, Stephen, who's, I say, is going to become, has already become, you sense a brilliant snooker man. We love watching him on television. He's really good at that job. He's really good at the game. You know, this is a trophy, a title. They're always important, aren't they? To get, you know, it sounds obvious, but to put that in the cabinet, you know, it will shows like it's that progression in your career. It's those nice moments. So we say congratulations to him, friend of the pod. But who isn't?
yeah, great win. Isn't the oldest tournament in snooker? 103rd edition of this since 1916, which is incredible, really.
Wow,
very greats of the game have got their hands on that. So, yeah, and a great-looking trophy. I'm looking at it right now. Yeah. It's got wonderful handles. The picture of Stephen, he's not using the handles to hold it up. He's using the base. But he's won it. He can do what he wants. But, yeah, congratulations. And that will, you know, it's all good confidence. I think he'll be in the Q-Tour playoff coming up at some point. So, yeah, congratulations. I was following him his progress on his stag do last weekend on Instagram, where he was away with a couple of other pro players, and I'm impressed that he's got over the hangover by now to win that tournament. So well done on both fronts.
Indeed, congratulations from us, Stephen, for your success there, winning the English Amateur Championship, as they feel as an historic title and a really notable success for you. Phil, I think we've just done just about over half an hour now, so we're kind of on target for our hour. I got a bit sniffy recently. A couple people saying, oh, quite long. And I was like, actually, you know, we do tend to stick to an hour, but then we really let that drift the last few. So we're going to try and stick to around the hour mark, aren't we? And we should say that you are listening here to the Talking Snooker podcast with Phil Hague and Nick Metcalf.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Phil, we have a couple of pieces of correspondence are pro the events to come in Saudi, the invitational and then the ranking event. And obviously, you know, I've got to be, you know, I wouldn't be doing my duty to myself. There are some compliments here for me in this first email. I don't in some ways feel like they're entirely merged, and I'll explain why in a moment. But anyway, James Finnerty. Hi, Nick and Phil. Hope you are well. First of all, I'd like to let you know how much I enjoy the podcast. I find you both to be extremely well-balanced and have honest views, which bode well with your entertaining spirit over the mic. Nick, I recently read your article in Sporting Life and listened to your opinions on the Saudi tournament on the podcast. I'd like to say I found your viewpoint to be extremely refreshing, as not many journalists have had the guts to seriously look at the morality issues surrounding snooker's new role in Saudi Arabia's sports washing mission, and many highlight hypocrisy, etc., as an excuse to overlook these issues. So thank you for being brave enough to give your honest opinion and avoid the temptation to overlook these areas where many have failed to do so. Whilst I agree with everything you said, I find myself in the strange situation with also thinking WSC have done the correct thing in having discussions with the Saudis. I will outline the reasons below. I think this is vital in order to safeguard the sport. Although I don't know if you are a huge golf fan, well, I am. Just to say I am James. He says, I know you're well aware of the LIV Golf situation. I myself was an avid golf fan as well as a snooker nut. And what has happened with the situation in professional golf over the last couple of years cannot be underestimated when it comes to other sports. The parallels between when the Saudis decided they want to become involved with golf and snooker are uncanny, with one major difference. The major governing body for professional golf in the US, the PGA Tour, decided they did not want to engage in discussions with the Saudis around 3 years ago and refused to consider giving them any seat at the table. Although at the time it seemed the correct thing to do, in hindsight, it was one of the most catastrophic mistakes any sporting governing body has ever made. And the result of this is the sport has indefinitely become more fractured than it ever has been. If there's one thing the Saudis do not like, it's being told they are not allowed to join the party. They do not like being told no. In response to hearing no for the PGA Tour, they set up LIV Golf, allocated billions of dollars from their public investment fund toward it, which has resulted in the sport being completely ruined for us viewers. Please do not make the mistake in thinking snooker is too small a sport for them to consider doing something similar. If the WSC were to refuse to engage with Saudi Arabia, the consequences may be too disastrous for snooker fans to imagine. It would not surprise me one bit if they decided to set up their own tour, take away the top players, start their own world championship, etc. Yes, they would not invest billions of dollars into lining snooker players' pockets like they have with golfers, but they would certainly invest tens of millions Even $1 billion for the PIF is a drop in the ocean, and they would do it just to show that they can. Whilst I completely agree with your points on talking snooker and on sporting life, the question you primarily asked in that article was, is it really worth it? I just thought I would highlight the above points, as I think it may ultimately be worth it, as it would most certainly have been worth it for golf too. While Saudi Arabia's human rights record is reprehensible, and it is correct to highlight these issues, which I seriously commend you for, I think the alternative option to giving them a tournament could potentially lead to unimaginable consequences, as unimaginable as they were for golf fans a little as 2 years ago. To be honest, the only real worry for me is whether the WSC are planning to host the World Championship over there down the road. As reading between the lines, this seems to be a real possibility. I hope this isn't the case, and I'm crossing my fingers and toes they keep it at the Crucible for as long as possible. Keep up the good work, please. Listen to Talking Snooker has become an enjoyable staple of my weekly routine. Best regards, James. Thanks for that, James. Long email, I know, but lots of valuable points. Thank you for your kind words. I mean, I don't really think I'm entirely worthy of them. I may have spoken well on this issue, but I'm sure on others I will have come short on. I mean, it has been an eye-opener the way it's been covered, I think. But listen, it's something that I think is important to talk about, and thank you for sort of bringing that up. And yeah, I take your points on board that if snooker hadn't, you know, agreed to go along with this, it may have led to more sort of perilous matters. Fair enough. I think it's a bit different. I think it's a bit funny comparing it to golf on some levels. And I said this from the very start, is that this is only a few days of an invitational event and then a ranking event, whereas the golf business is massive. I know you say that they created Live Golf, but they still wanted to go really, really big to begin with. They wanted something massive, whereas I think in snooker, it's kind of smaller so far. Yeah, I mean, I do think that there is talk that the World Championship could well go overseas. Could it go to Saudi? Possibly. Some people are saying they're pleased that this fourth major's come about, because that might mean that the World Championship is safer for now. You know, those questions are to come further down the line. But listen, thanks for your points. Appreciate them. And Phil, I think it's fair to say some good wisdom there from James.
Yeah, definitely. I think he's made really good points. I mean, they're seemingly sort of unstoppable force in numerous sports, and it doesn't seem to be slowing down. Some people would like very much sports, certain sports, and this sport sort of take a stand against it, maybe it is the more sensible option to give them a little bit and so avoid taking the whole cake, as it were. It makes sense. You know, we won't know any of these situations, because they're either ors, aren't they? But that, what James put out there certainly seemed to make sense. And I think I like James's email in general, because I think what I find tedious in so many points is that so people need to be sort of all in one way or the other. There's definitely arguments on both sides of, you know, the sport and separate everything else, you know, and you got to, even if you're sort of naturally dead against doing anything over there because of the human rights things, which is the situation we're in, you could still accept that it's positive for the sport to go there and take the money and grow the sport in certain ways. You know, it's not all or nothing. I was listening to a couple of correspondents on Snooker Scene podcast, and I think two separate emails on in one episode said we're really arguing how good it was for snooker. Fair enough. And I think they both said I can't think of one reason why you wouldn't want to do it. I was like, how can you not think of one reason why you wouldn't want to do it? I mean, even if you're fine going and playing the snooker and getting the money, like that, that's fine. I'm not having a go at that opinion, but to say you can't think of one reason why not, come on, that's mad. So yeah, I enjoyed James's sort of accepting that he's not loving it, but it might be the right thing to do, which is somewhere where I am as well. I wouldn't want to begrudge the players of going and taking the cash. A lot of them need it. Not so much these guys going there this week, but when the ranking event comes around, a lot of those guys do it. So that's about where I am. But I find it hard to believe that anyone can say, I can't think of one reason why we shouldn't go. Blows my mind that. Anyway, unless you've got anything else to say on that one, I'll move on to the next one.
No, I haven't said. You can move on.
This is Jonathan Van Kuyk. I'm sorry, I've probably butchered your surname there, but I'll give it a go. Hi, Nick and Phil. Very much enjoy the podcast. Have been listening for just over a year, but have never written in. I almost wrote in after the announcement of the Saudi exhibition tournament. However, with the announcement of a new lucrative ranking tournament in Saudi Arabia, feel I shouldn't miss the opportunity to make my point on this contentious topic. I believe it was Nick who mentioned that there seemed to be no positive reasons for holding a tournament in Saudi Arabia other than the money. I would like to push back on this idea. I am someone who is moderately plugged into the Gulf expat community. While I don't live out there myself yet, I have family who live and work in Riyadh, and my partner's family are based in Dubai. I have therefore visited the Gulf states often, and am open-minded to the idea of relocating there myself, should the opportunity arise. I bring this up to raise the fact that Dubai has plenty of snooker billiard clubs, some of which are rather swanky. As you might expect, these are particularly popular with Chinese and British expats, although of course golf and tennis dominate the amateur sports scene. Nevertheless, I expect the two new Saudi events to be well attended by excited British and Chinese fans who will be thrilled to be able to spectate the game we all love without having to spend a lot of time and money on flights back home. I, for one, am pleased that if I do end up living and working in either Saudi or, as is more likely, the UAE, I won't have to leave my favourite sport behind. This, of course, does not necessarily tip the balance of reasons in favour of holding snooker tournaments in Saudi Arabia, but I think it is a perspective worth airing, as it proves that more than Mammon justifies the existence of these events. Here's hoping to a revival of the Dubai Classics to complete the picture. Thank you for reading my email. Kind regards, Jonathan. Well, again, otherwise very interesting because it's perspective that we probably don't have. And similar to what you were saying before, Nick, you know, the snooker fans everywhere, and they're the last people we want to begrudge when we're talking about this kind of thing.
Definitely. And that's always been my favourite point out of, I said from the start, I wanted people to make the point. And people have not done a very good job with that. That sounds really pious, but they haven't done it a good job at all with giving me other reasons. This is a good one. I think, why should people in that area be denied the chance to see sport? I said it before, but it's happened at the Qatar World Cup. People say they'll never, actually, ironically now, they will have the chance again because the World Cup's now going to be in Saudi Arabia, unfortunately, in times to come. But, you know, they were like, we can't believe something as big as this has come to this region. We never would have believed. And I'm sure, you know, I say Saudi World Cup, I'm sure there'll be the Olympics in time as well. And, you know, things will change and you'll see a lot more there. But, you know, I do take that point on board. And listen, I've seen it on various forums, you know, as well, Reddit, which I really enjoy reading, a lot of people on there saying, you know, actually, I'm going. A couple of them are from different areas of Saudi and traveling, and I think a couple of from nearby countries, they're going. They never thought there'd be a snooker event in that part of the world. So I get that point, and that's a point I really take on board. Yeah, I mean, we'll leave Saudi for now, I think, generally, but I think now it is complex, and I really take your words of wisdom on board there, and I know that's something I can be a bit guilty of on this one, other ones as well, but I think sometimes, you know, whoever we are, journalists or not, but maybe particularly journalists, you can become a little bit fixated on one thing and start to become a little bit dogmatic, and not really, that's not the mature thing to do, is it? The mature thing is to do it, is to look at both things. I mean, look, what I would say is it is perfectly possible. And we have seen it. And people might say, well, it's easier for these guys because they're, you know, absolutely massively wealthy. People like Lewis Hamilton have been there and said, I don't actually feel that comfortable here. I'm not comfortable with parts of what happens in this country, but I'm still here. You know, it is possible for snooker players to delve into that world a little bit more than, well, I've just come here for the money. I mean, that, I don't know. I mean, it is possible to straddle both sides a little bit more than that. It probably takes a little bit of courage, but you know, that is certainly a possibility. And the other thing, you know, Mark Allen was saying, oh, if anyone will take this opportunity, I don't like that point of view. I've never liked that point of view. We've obviously lived in had different life experiences. If Mark and not Mark, a lot of people I see say that. I've known people all my life to turn down money, turn down opportunities, change jobs, supposedly downgrade jobs, because there are things they're not comfortable. Not just always morals, not just, you know, but some odds are long into that sort of area. So not absolutely everybody would, you know. Sometimes people are sort of think, well, I'm really after money, so everyone is. Well, not everyone is, you know. That's not how life works. We've probably been conditioned to believe that, you know, in a sort of age of rampant capitalism. Oh, we all want greedy, we want a slice of the pie and even more. No, that's not true. That's not how humans are, in my experience. People aren't always like that. There's much more nuance to it. So I'm a bit allergic to that point that everyone would take the money. No, that's that, I don't see it like that, I'm afraid. And there endeth the sermon, Phil Hague.
Shall I go, Steve Dunn?
Yes, indeed.
Here we go. Hello.
It is Steve Dunn. Carry on.
Sure. Hello, guys. Long time since I've corresponded, but I haven't missed a second of your dulcet tones. I've been thinking recently about how a given tournament sits on the in the context of the rest of the season. For example, I love the recent version of the UK's, aka World Champs, light, and think it has really helped re-establish it as a major title. But it goes the other way too. The expansion of the German Masters improves the tournament when viewed on its own, but in the context of the season, I must admit, it felt less characterful to me. It felt more like a home nations event, whereas in previous years, it was a bit of change of pace. Similarly, I'm worried about the expanded Tour Championship might feel too similar to the Players' Champs. I have a suspicion that this is pretty unimportant because it would only affect hardcore fans like myself who keenly follow every moment of the tour, and perhaps the German Masters has been improved for German fans, so that's a big plus. Sorry, I didn't intonate that properly. It's a niche concern. I anticipate Phil saying he won't be losing any sleep over it, but do you guys have any thoughts on how tournaments affect each other? Thanks, as always, for your quality and regular journalism, as snooker lovers couldn't be doing without it, Steve. I do get what your point saying completely, because, it's such a packed calendar now, and it does help massively when tournaments stand out from each other. I definitely think that. And I think Dave Henning was saying on Snooker Scene that next season it's looking likely that the Players' Championship would go straight into the Tour Championship. And those ITV events are great. We're both big fans of them, I think. But they do sort of look quite similar, and it's just they get smaller and smaller. But if it goes just from 16 players to the 12-player tour and they're right after each other, then that really would feel quite similar and not standing out so much. I hadn't thought about those specific concerns that Steve had said about, but I do definitely think it's helpful when tournaments have their own identity as much as possible. We have the Home Nation Series, they're all going to be the same, but then you get the differences of where they are and you try and boost that as a sort of selling point. Obviously the waterfront in Belfast is a big selling point on its own, but the tournaments in general are the same. But it is nice for all the other ones to, as much as possible, sort of identify themselves from each other, isn't it?
I think there's a lot of wisdom in that. I do see a lot of people sort of I speak to them when I go to events, and some of them do say that all the sort of tournaments feel the same. I don't think that really. Maybe I'm not moving fast enough in my head and the way I'm thinking about it. I think there is quite a bit of variation. I mean, okay, there's a lot of best of sevens, I get that, but the home nations are different. The ITV ones all feel, a bit different to me. Okay, maybe those three are kind of similar-ish, but I like the way the players decline each time. I feel there is quite a lot of variety. Yeah, I do understand that would maybe not be suboptimal, actually, if the players go straight into the tour. You want gaps in between. I do think the Pat calendar is a lovely problem, but I do think it creates things that are great problems for us. But they are, I suppose, still problems. Like, you know, we said, although I think it might have been different this last time or two, but that when an event is straight after the UK, it's huge after the Lord Mayor Show for a few days, which it is. But, you know, it's hard to sort of avoid that, really. And, yeah, I think there's a view, and I know Gary Moss, our friend, has sort of expressed this, certainly about the German and maybe about a couple of the ITV ones as well, is they're good, but he feels like they almost could be even bigger. I think there is something in that, but I think it's time as well. I'm about to say I'm a very impatient person. It's one of my worst faults. I want things to happen straight a bloody way. I don't know if it's a London thing or just a me thing. So I'm a bit like, why can't it be bigger? Why can't we do this? And actually, you need time, you know. Like, the German's over a decade old now, and it has got a certain status. I'm going to use that word, gravitas. It's got genuine gravitas. Could it have more? Yes, probably could. But I think it will get there. You know, it's now 7 days I don't mean to pick on the Germans, only because it's in this email, but that's one that comes to mind. You know, hopefully now it'll be seven there next year and the year after and the year after. And that will slowly get even, even bigger. The ITV events, again, they're so new, actually. Maybe we should, you know, rather than that thing, oh, they all look the same and, you know, maybe they could be bigger. Maybe you should flip it around and say, actually, it's amazing they're so big as they are, really. They've identified themselves very quickly. So, no, good point, Steve. Very nerdy. I know. I hope you won't mind us saying, because we class you as a – well, I say we class him as a friend. He's nearly a friend, isn't he? He's a very, very strong acquaintance.
Oh, let him in, yeah.
Well, if he came over to the same table we were in the pub, we wouldn't say, go away, Steve, would we? We'd let him sit down for a pint. Of course we would. So, yeah, maybe he's very, very, very close to friend. It's a hair's width away, really. But, yeah, no, good points. I know you're really into your snooker, Steve, in a very big way. So the minutiae tournaments is great. But, no, I don't think we're losing too much sleep over it, but it's a nice email, so thank you. And Brian McGovern, who's one of our nicest fans, Phil. Brian often tweets about all kinds of interesting things and kind of links us in even to Irish transport matters, doesn't he? You know, it's going to be his commute's been a bit spoiled, and which we enjoy all that. Now, Brian wants to raise an issue on the podcast regarding ITV4 coverage of snooker. He says, I'm a Republic of Ireland resident, and I'm glad to say I'm able to watch ITV4 here. As you know, the Players' Championship had two tables in operation, ITV4 showing the match on table one. Well, anyone who wanted to watch table two had to go to ITVX. The only problem is, in Ireland, people don't have access to ITVX. I'm sending this email on the evening of Ronnie O'Sullivan against Zhao Yulong. After that, ITV4 showed brief coverage of table two, which featured Ali Carter v Tom Ford. And they said if anyone wanted to continue watching, to go to ITVX. Just thought I'd share my annoyance over this, as I'm a Republic of Ireland resident. Hope you can raise this in the podcast. Best wishes, Brian. Thanks, Brian. Appreciate that. I'm a little bit loath to sort of make too much many comments on that. I mean, for a while we've been saying, why can't we have two tables? Now people have got that. As much as I sound like I'm going to get political, but I don't want to. As much as I'm half Irish for starters, but as much as when you go to Ireland, it doesn't to me feel any different to being at home. I regard Ireland as they couldn't be closer brothers, as far as I'm concerned. I suppose in actual literal terms, it's a different country, isn't it? So maybe, you know, you might not expect all the services you get in the UK, is what I'm getting at. It would be great if that were the case, but I guess that's why you don't have ITVX. But bit of a shame. We know what you're saying, but for most people, there is slowly the coverage where you want more and more from ITV. So I'm a bit low to get on their case, and they do great things for snooker. But we know what you're saying. You'd like to sort of see it in Ireland as well. But Michael McMullen was doing commentary, of course, to keep the Irish thing going, Phil, on we should say. He's definitely a friend of ours. Maybe not a friend of the pod, but very clearly a friend of ours. And so that was all interesting. But, yeah, we see the problem you have with Ireland there. But bit of a shame. Maybe there'll be a chance to see it in ITVX there in the future. People always talk about these very easy ways to me. Just get a VPN, they say. They don't realise I'm stuck in about 1982, Phil. You know, I'm still sort of a... I've moved on to compact disc, don't get me wrong. I'm not that old-fashioned. But yeah, VPN, goodness. I'll have to get someone very, very clever around my house to sort that out.
Yeah, no, I think that probably is an answer. But yeah, no, I don't know, obviously. I don't know anything about why that is the case or anything. But we certainly have raised it. So hopefully if anyone's listening and can sort that out next time. But yeah, because there was some good action. I did end up watching quite a lot of Table 2, because Table 2 seemed to just have all the really long matches. Because they're quite often table one finish and they flick over to there. And yeah, Michael McMullen and Joe Perry, which was a nice little team on there. So yeah, I mean, I don't want to be rubbing this into Brian, but it was a nice service to have.
This is like the old Jim Bowen, isn't it? Here's what you could have won. Yeah, sorry, Brian. We have raised it.
Yeah. Hopefully that will be improved next time. Here's Tony. Mark Allen is now my favourite for Sheffield. I was starting to lean that way anyway, but seeing how he won the Players' Championship without ever really being at his best has convinced me he's the man. Yeah, I'm sure he'll be a popular choice. It was interesting, Stephen Hendry on the Will Snooker Tour podcast, Snooker Club, was saying, obviously, he's a leading contender for Sheffield, but almost the opposite of what Tony's saying there. He was saying that he's not convinced that style of sort of grinding snooker will get him through a whole World Championship, which some people would say the opposite, but I'm not going to argue with Stephen Hendry, but he reckoned that'd be too sort of, when it's not really his natural style, he thinks it'd be too sort of draining and he'd too much energy expend playing these long, sort of playing at 30 seconds a shot, finishing games past midnight too much. He can't be doing it over 17 days, says Mr. Hendry. And as I say, not going to argue with him too much, but yeah, Mark Allen, certainly one of the leading contenders.
Yeah, I saw those Hendry comments. I suppose really the idea is to have a bit of both, isn't it? Mm. I was going to write about Mark Selby for my new column coming up, but I'm not going to do that now because I think it was banking on him winning the Players' Championship a little bit. But what I'm certainly planning on doing that one day. And I think, you know, the reason he comes into my mind is that people say he's just a grinder, Selby, and that's sort of just not true. He can score so heavily. You know, and I think it's people that can do both. I mean, yeah. You know, Ronnie does it, said it time and time again. He can knuckle down, Ronnie. And that, you know, it's no secret. He's obviously the greatest player of them all, but, you know, it's no secret behind, for example, his two recent wins. And actually, I should say that I can't remember who it was now. It might come to me. I wanted to issue a bit of a mea culpa, which I don't think I've done so far on here, which is that, is it Matthew O'Connell? Might well be. It was a really, really good snooker person that was actually saying to me recently that, I'm glad this has come to my mind, Ronnie winning 22 was actually a lot better quality throughout for him than 20. And I think I did bunch them together too much. 20, he really did. He was doing it a lot from memory, coming from behind, just scrapping it out. With actually 22, his standard was quite good. I think I was swayed a bit in 22 by his opponents not being up for the job, but that's not really Ronnie's fault. And he actually battered Allen and Maguire. Sorry, this is very nerdy going back to this, but I think I'm going to stop bracketing those two together. I think Ronnie did actually play well in 22. It might not have been a totally firing Higgins. It might not have been a totally firing job, but he did play well. But anyway, I think he did a bit of both. I think I can see where Hendry's coming from, but I think Mark's got enough of those overall qualities generally to be a big contender. I know two or three people, really learning people in the game, have also said they think this could well be his year. It's going to be hard because you've got the aforementioned Ronnie, you've got Selby who's going to be sniffing around, bloody hell. You know, you've got Judd. There are going to be so many incredible contenders. So, as ever, winning that tournament is just, even thinking about it in my head, Phil, it hurts my head to think about it, let alone going out and winning it. It's one of the great sporting triumphs if you do. So, you know, good luck to him. I think he's, you know, it was an important breakthrough what he did last year, getting to that semi and getting close in the semi. That was big, I think. Because he had been a long, long time. His record there is poor. But now he's got that, you know, I think that could pave the way. Maybe not this one even coming up, but so the next 2, 3, 4, 5, you feel this is golden chance time for Allen. He's a serial winner. You know, he's done it in so many events now. He's rocketing up that ranking events board. He's joking about Sean Murphy being in his sights, isn't he? And they're good pals, and they're like a good joke. But I think he's one behind Murphy now. And he's really piling on the wins on. So I tend to agree with Tony. I don't know if he'd be my man. I said Selby, I think, in our Christmas special. I think I'll probably still stick with Mark. But, you know, yeah, Mark's one of the 5 or 6, I would think, prime contenders as we sit here now. Into March, Phil. We're into March, getting closer and closer. But, yeah, anyway, massive move on. Quite a lot of Goff stuff now. We did ask for Goff's memories in the last few days. And Jerry Moore says, I went a few times over the years, but I suppose the 1989 Higgins v Hendry final stands out. This is, of course, the Irish Masters. I was a massive Hendry fan. I'd met Higgins a few years before, and let's just say he wasn't the nicest. That's not the first time I've heard that view, Phil. So needless to say, I was in the minority of crowd who was shouting for the home favourite Higgins. I got a few... You were going for Hendry, actually. You, So you were minority were not shouting for Higgins. I got a lot of dirty looks shouting for Hendry, and I was nearly as disappointed as he was that he didn't win. Tried to get Hendry's autograph afterwards, but he wasn't really in the form for it for some reason. I'm bridging a 35-year gap by seeing Hendry and all the rest in Goss this weekend. Maybe I'll get that long-awaited autograph, fingers crossed. I like that, waiting 35 years for an autograph. Drop us another line, Jerry. Let us know if you did get one. Looking forward to watching snooker in that great venue again. It's a brilliant place to watch snooker, and it's sad there isn't a ranking event in Ireland. If they could find a venue, given I'd say probably myself that Goss is too small, it would probably be sold out, in my opinion. Regards, Jerry. Well, I agree with that last point. I'm not Irish. I'm half Irish, of course, but I'm not fully Irish. I can't say for sure whether it would be sold out, wherever it was, because there were some Irish events towards the end that wasn't the case, actually, when towards its end of its run of having events. But I think now with the gap, there'll be such anticipation now. I'm certainly sure the first event back would be pretty much a golden ticket, wherever it was in Ireland, I think. So we hope you had a good time there, Jerry. Thanks for that. And yeah, we're the start of a few Goths emails now, Phil.
Yeah, a short one from John here just saying, thoroughly enjoyed those 4 hours. First time I've watched Channel 5 since Neighbours ended, and nearly in as many tears. That's nice. It was an emotional ending for Ken and for John too. Again, if not a friend of the podcast, very, very near.
That was too short. Come on.
I'll let you
down your clock, but just say to John, yeah, that was, of course, supposed to be the very last episode of Neighbours, but it has come back. And we know John is a big, big Neighbours fan. So one of the happiest people that I know when that news came through, and I know he's enjoying the new run of the show, which is now on Freebie. Yeah, Daniel, for you.
Yeah, this is Daniel Clark. Hi, Nick and Phil. Just thought I'd drop you a line about the wonderful Seniors 900 event at Goths. What a day it was. I've attended most of the seniors events there in recent years, but maybe because of the presence of the TV cameras or competitive format, this one really had a feel reminiscent of the glory days of the Irish Masters. The atmosphere was electric, and we were treated to some really good snooker, with Jimmy gliding around the table like the whirlwind of old. Big breaks from Hendry and Fergal, and in the end, Ken Doherty finally getting to lift the trophy in a place that holds such special memories for him. You could see how much it meant to him with the emotional interview at the end. So, after a successful day, why shouldn't the main tour be looking at Goths as a venue? Well, let's set aside issues of money and TV deals for a second and examine the venue itself and dispel some of the narrative that has grown in recent times. Obviously, with only one table, it wouldn't be suitable for a full field ranking event, but why not something like the Tour Championship or even just a revival of the old Irish Masters? Some have pointed out the lack of practice facilities, but with a recently opened hotel on the grounds, as well as a large building at the rear of the venue, this would no longer be a big issue. Also, we no longer have the cumbersome TV cameras of old, so plenty of room around the table to manoeuvre, and the angle of the static table camera today was more in line with what we were used to seeing on TV screens. Looking at access to the venue for fans, Goths is a perfectly situated. It's 25 minutes from Dublin and easily accessible to everyone else via the motorway network. A venue in Dublin itself, although in our biggest population centre, simply wouldn't attract the crowds from the rest of the country. Finally, I was sitting beside two guys today who were attending live snooker for the first time, and they were blown away by the experience. By the end of the afternoon, they were already talking about coming back next year and bringing a few more people along with them. The return of a full tour event might just provide the shot in the arm that snooker in this country so badly needs. Cheers, guys, and keep preaching the gospel of snooker, Daniel. Well, thank you very much. It's great to hear reviews from people who've been there and who know the venue so intimately well. That's excellent stuff. And yeah, I mean, you never hear a bad word about Goths, do you? On any front, really.
You don't really. And Daniel is something of an authority, particularly on Irish snooker. And he actually wrote a lovely piece on his own blog talking about his memories of going there with his father and some of the early days of knowing it. He's been going there for decades. And I know we had someone earlier on this very episode saying they thought it was too small, but Daniel outlining the reasons there where it might be too small for a fully blown Home Nations event, for example, but for one table event, it could certainly work. And we appreciate you outlining those views. And I know that Daniel, you sent some great photos from there as well. Had a really good day. And that's a general impression from there that I've seen. Smiles on faces. I know I asked our correspondent earlier if he got an autograph with Hendry. There's every chance he did, because I saw loads of fans, I don't know if you did, posing for photos with Ken, photos with Hendry. I'm sure Watergross as well. It seemed like those stars and players could, those stars and fans could mix so well, as they can do at other more high profile normal ranking events on the main tour. But at this, it seemed like it was such a, the impression I got without being there was a real homely family feel afternoon. I love to see all that. So that's brilliant. And yeah, thanks for that, Daniel. Lovely, lovely email. I'm glad you had such a good time and always keep in touch with us. Friend of the podcast, of course, one that came on in our early days. That's it for correspondence, Phil. We've done over an hour. Any other business? Got to say, Tom Ford, what a guest. Bloody hell. We've had some response to that. We've had some response to that and a half. He had some very illuminating things to say about the game. Cutting edge stuff, wasn't it? More than I was expecting, I must admit. You weren't so surprised. You've spoken to him. I actually hadn't for an interview. And I've heard him a couple of times. You know, he's not, I've always known, you know, had at some extent related to, you know, being, you know, someone that wasn't shy to make a point. But even then, I didn't think he'd be that strong with his views. He was very, very good value. We're really grateful. Thank you to you, Phil, for setting it up.
Yeah, no, thanks for coming on. As I always say, this is last time I'm going to say this, but I feel like I say it loads. But we can speak to people for an hour, and there's just endless more stuff we're going to ask him. So that was definitely the case there. We sort of skipped through quite a lot. But that's always the way. You know, these guys, they've been playing for so long, they've got such a lot of stuff to talk about. But maybe we'll come back another time. But yeah, no, really enjoyed having him on. And thanks to everyone listening and getting in touch.
Can I please ask that that's not the last time you say that? Because I actually like that point you make, and I think you make it well.
I feel like I make it every time we have anyone on.
I don't care about that. So, and I don't think the listeners will care. It's a good point. You make it well. Don't say it all the time, okay? Maybe a bit more sparing, but please don't make that the last time you say it. Cool. Players' Championship viewing figures from ITV. Very good. More than 600,000 watching the final. Sorry, this is something that I say again and again, but I won't be apologising. It's not just about Ronnie. Ronnie wasn't there. There's a Ronnie tax. When Ronnie plays, bigger audiences. When he doesn't play, they're still good audiences. People love the game, not just Ronnie. And I was glad to see that because that was a big, big percentage ride. Over 40% up, I think, on the year before for the final. I can't remember who was the players' final of a year ago, actually. But this off the top of my head, but this was good viewing figures, and that's my view, Phil. Ronnie is the number one attraction in this sport, but even when he's not there, people tune in for those big finals. It was a long night. We said it was one for the purists at times. It got a bit scrappy at times, but it was no less compelling for that, and over 600,000 people didn't mind watching it at all.
That's always the way, isn't it? I can't remember one where I've seen, and there's been obvious drop off. This is off the top of my head. I really thought, okay, those specific players are in it. That's why that's happened. People just love watching snooker. Murphy beat Carter last year. That was happening in that one. We said at the time, you know, it wasn't a classic of a final, but. I didn't hate it by any means. It was very interesting. And it really felt like it was bubbling up to the end. We thought we were going to get one of these rare deciders in finals, which we're still waiting for. And that looked like it was going to be the one. But hopefully there'll be one to come. You know, Tour Championship, something like that would be lovely if we get one there. And, of course, the World Championship if possible.
Yes, it was more, we should say, it was Mark Hanna-Knuckles beating Zhang Andrew a week ago in that final. People stay with it as well. The ultimate example in recent times for me was that one under COVID, in COVID, when behind closed doors, that unbelievable Judd and Neil UK semi. People stay with it. If you looked at the figures, they were like, yeah, some people went to bed because they have very, very early rise, but loads didn't. They couldn't go to bed without seeing that to its conclusion. And you just can't sometimes. It's so compelling. So sometimes people, I know I talk about the dream, and I still think there is a dream element of 10 to 10.30, maybe 10 to 11, when people haven't gone to bed generally, those more casual watchers will still watch. But if it's really, really compelling and it'll go towards 11, midnight, 1, they'll still stick around, which is another great thing about snooker and the fans of this sport and why we get so many good TV viewing figures. We should go, shouldn't we? I feel like I'm waffling, not for the first time. True.
I thought you were fine, but yeah, we probably should go.
the Saudi Invitational will take place over the next few days, and then we'll return probably after the climax of the Championship League, the non-ranking edition, with our next episode. We'll also look ahead to the World Open. That's the next big fully blown ranking tournament of the season. And Sheffield on the horizon, Phil. Loads of big events. Have a great week, and see you next time, sir.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, it's crazy to think it's next month. That feels very real, very tangible now, doesn't it? You too. Have a great week. Pleasure, as always. And thanks for listening, everyone. We really do appreciate it. Thank you.
We really do. Good use of tangible there from you. Looking through the old paper diary, April the 8th qualifiers. Oh, bloody hell. April the 20th, World Championship Crucible. Along with the Diamond League.
Half marathon the day before the qualifiers. There we go.
You're doing that, aren't you? You're doing that. Which date's that?
The half marathon's on the 7th, but then I've got the Edinburgh marathons in May. So the half marathon's a bit of a warm-up.
Because when everyone texts in, Phil, letting to a secret out there now, I can never get hold of you anymore. You're doing more running than Sebco. That's one for the teenagers.
Just because I'm so slow, I'm out there for hours, and that's the problem.
Not quite as big in our hearts. World Championship at the Crucible, then also underneath that, Diamond League meeting in Tianjin, China. So we'll probably be more attentive towards the events in Sheffield that day. That's all to come, Phil. Crucible to come, Tour Championship to come, World Open to come, loads of great snooker to come. And look out for a Sporting Life column for me in the coming days as well, when I'll probably talk about what a great climax of the season we got, particularly looking at the player of the season race, how many players have been playing well during this campaign. But for now, we must shoot off. Thank you very much indeed for your company. Keep your thoughts coming to us for now from your old friends, Phil Haig and Nick Metcalf. Cheerio.
Sports Social Podcast Network.